So Winnipeg's a great place, Manitoba's a great place, but we have a labor shortage. All the service industries are going to become more and more demand. Healthcare, machine operators, cashiers, service station attendants, you know, sheet metal workers, tool and die makers, electricians, plumbers, all the construction trades, drywallers, cabinet makers, tile setters. Immigration is like jumping across a ditch full of alligators. Getting 99% across does not help. One of the more popular ways is to come as a student, take a course, graduate, get a postgraduate work permit, and then you're eligible. And we're going to run a pilot program and allow two groups of 5,000 child caregivers and 5,000 elder care. There are lots of hairstylists all over the world who would love to come to Canada. Don't need to have a high level of English, don't need a lot of education, don't need much more than a couple years of experience.
It is very welcoming. There are a lot of opportunities and the cost of living is reasonable. So as long as you can put up with some cold winters, it's a wonderful place and there's great heating too.
Free education, free medical, a guaranteed job.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Bernie Chats. We're going to do something a little different today. We're going to record this one on behalf of jobsincanada.com. So it's going to be all about careers in Canada and related topics around that. We're joined by Frank Goldberg. He's the CEO of cdnvisa.com. And he's also a licensed, registered Canadian immigration consultant. He's a serial entrepreneur who's had a number of careers in his life. He's a former CPA. He's a certified management consultant, or at least was. He's a licensed foreign worker recruiter, as well as having been the founding president of the Manitoba Immigration Consultants Association and the inaugural Manitoba chair of the Canadian Migration Institute. Frank, how are you today?
Fine, thank you.
I hope I didn't botch that intro too much.
Well, you did a little bit. I'm not former. All those things, I still am.
Okay, perfect. That's good.
So I'm still a practicing CPA and CMC and RCIC. And I think very few people in Canada do that.
I was going to say, because it costs every year to maintain those kinds of designations, right?
Yes. When I started out, I was a CPA with a management consultant degree, and I did mostly business plans, a lot for business applicants that were being processed by immigration lawyers or immigration consultants, till a couple of clients approached me to bypass them. So I did. And the next thing you know, it was late 1990s, I was doing immigration consulting primarily for business applications. The natural offshoot of that was for skilled workers. And in the early 2000s, there was a huge shortage in skilled help in Manitoba. Soon we became the largest provider of skilled workers through the Manitoba Provincial Nomination Program. And then we just grew from there. And so now we're a boutique firm, 5 people, and we do all aspects of Canadian immigration except refugee work. We don't do any of that. We just do economic immigration.
Economic immigration. So workers and people that want to invest in Canada and people that are looking to acquire businesses or get into business in Canada.
Or find jobs in Canada. We like to say we make Canada bigger.
Sounds good.
And as you can see from our tagline, we're unique in that we process and handle clients from cradle to grave. That's why it's we're with you every step all the way, which is what a prospective immigrant wants, someone to hold their hand from the very beginning till the day they get their permanent residence.
Makes sense. It sounds like a great service. How is the skills situation in Manitoba now? It's a tricky time right now with the pandemic because we're hopefully towards the tail end of the pandemic right now, in between the third and fourth wave, let's say. And how are things now and how have things been with the skills shortage or the demand in Manitoba?
There's several factors all coming together at once. First of all, Manitoba, even though it's one of the most reasonably priced places to live in Canada, it doesn't get the same PR that Toronto and Vancouver and Calgary get. And so most immigrants don't necessarily look to Winnipeg right away. Only once they do and they find out that Winnipeg is an easy place to live and all of Manitoba is an easy place to live and at quite economical rates. You can buy a house in Winnipeg, but it's impossible in Vancouver or Toronto, especially for an immigrant. And so Manitoba is becoming more and more popular. Manitoba started the concept of provincial nominations approximately 25 years ago. The concept is that the province will absorb a lot of the work from the feds in exchange for having the right to select people. And it caught on. All the provinces have since set up their own nomination department. The trend will be now for the provinces to be doing most of the selection and the federal government primarily working the express entry program.
Being from Winnipeg originally, I understand Winnipeg fairly well, or at least I used to. And I've always looked at it and recommended to people that they consider moving to Winnipeg to start out with for a number of the reasons you say, Winnipeg being the hub of Manitoba, the capital of Manitoba, because it is welcoming, very welcoming. There are a lot of opportunities. I would say there's a lot less competition for those opportunities. Yes. And the cost of living is reasonable. So as long as you can put up with some cold winters, it's a wonderful place. And there's great heating too.
Winnipeg is almost an exact demographic copy of Canada. It's often used for test market. Mm-hmm. And so no matter what your ethnicity, you're going to find that there's already a community in Winnipeg. I think we have 80 communities.
Yeah, I could see that. And I often meet people here in British Columbia that have never been outside of British Columbia. And I tell them, well, you haven't really been to Canada yet. Go to Winnipeg and you'll see Canada.
Well, in a way, yeah. And so Winnipeg's a great place. Manitoba's a great place, but we have a labor shortage. And remember, we have a unique economy that 60% of our economy is government or Crown Corporation employees. If it's not government, if it's not federal government, provincial government, city government, it's Air Canada or school system or something, where 60% of Winnipeg jobs are in these high secure positions. So It's very difficult to attract people into the private sector.
Well, and there are still a fair amount of manufacturing in Manitoba and in Winnipeg.
Yes, there is.
There's a lot of assembly and manufacturing for the aerospace industry, still a fair amount of...
Actually, I do a lot of work in the garment industry. And one time it employed 10,000 people. It's now down to about 1,000 people, but they would like to be up to 1,500 people. They just can't seem to get the people.
Then, of course, there's a huge financial sector and agricultural sector. Finances with large insurance companies and even Investors Group is very large in Winnipeg. I think they were from Winnipeg originally.
Originally, and Canada Life is now headquartered in Winnipeg. Second largest insurance company in Canada after Manulife. What makes it really attractive is that it does not suffer the fluctuations in the economy that the rest of Canada does. We have very slow, steady growth, 1.5-2% a year. We never get a 20% growth like Calgary, followed by a 40% drop, and followed by a 30% rise, etc. So we're not volatile at all. It's not volatile. If you know what you're doing, you're going to keep your job, and you're going to keep your house, and you're going to live a long, happy life here. We have great education, great cultural, and a lot of community development. So Winnipeg's the place to be if you want to keep your life simple and get established. You know, we say that if you start from Winnipeg, no matter where you go, you're going to be successful.
Well, I always say it's a great place to be from.
Yeah, it is. A great place to be from.
Yeah, very grounded. And again,
but enough about Winnipeg. Let's talk about immigration. So what's happened is Winnipeg is slowly growing like it always does. It always had a shortage of skilled workers because it didn't have the PR to be attractive. It's got an aging population. And so, like for instance, bricklayers, the average bricklayer is over 65 years old in Winnipeg.
Wow.
That can't continue for too long. Okay. We need bricklayers. Okay. This would be a good example. The pandemic and all the government incentives, a lot of people lost their incentive to want to work. And they're comfortable to work from home or not work from home or live on the CERB. A lot of employers are having great difficulty in getting people to come back to work. This might change when the server runs out, but right now they're having difficulty. It's particularly in the food and beverage industry and the manufacturing industry for the entry-level workers. The $13, $14, $15, $16 an hour workers don't want to come back. They're very comfortable staying home.
I should unpack that a little bit so people are confused by that. The federal government put programs in place so that they could still have a basic income. That has led to the lack of incentive for many people to return to work and created an opening for a lot of opportunities for these kinds of workers, mostly frontline workers, retail workers, especially.
Yes, frontline retail, manufacturer, service industry, administrative, big problem. And then it's complicated by the fact of trying to bring foreign workers in, because there are a lot of foreign workers that would be happy to be in the food service industry or the retail service industry. But the government, someone threw around the statistic that like 82% of federal government IRCC offices working from home. And it's extremely slow. And the Manitoba government, they're just as slow too. Very slow.
So the process of and the paperwork of bringing people in is slowed down by federal workers working at home. The process is not as fast as it used to be. So people applying can expect to wait longer.
It's very, very, very slow. So that's complicating it. And then another thing complicating it is that statistically, Canadians saved more money during the pandemic than ever before. And that there's like $350 billion, comparable to the $350 billion that was pushed out by the government. So the government's pushed it out, and most of it went into savings because people are trying to protect themselves from long-term shortages in case they never got back to work.
Right.
So now all this money is built up. When the pandemic ends, it's expected that there be a huge demand for goods and services.
Yep.
And the smart employer these days is starting to gird up for that. And so they're trying to prepare for that. They're saying, oh, we're going to, our restaurant's going to be much busier and going to need much more staff, but they can't even get enough staff to open.
Right. I would imagine this is going to affect the travel industry a lot, because probably a lot of that savings is from people not being able to travel.
Right.
And then when the doors open up, as they're starting to now, people are starting to travel more and more now. So there's all that pent up demand. So the travel industry will be a big employer, I would imagine.
Right. And Canada's opened its borders. And so foreigners are coming here. And they're very normally very lucrative clients to have for the hospitality industry. But you have to have chambermaids to make the beds, concierges to staff the desks, waitresses to staff the restaurants. If you want to work, Manitoba is going to be a very good place to be. There'll be jobs for you in just about every sector.
So, Frank, what would you say are the top three or five fields, sectors, or positions that are now the biggest demand?
Federally, of course, there's all the healthcare. There's a shortage in healthcare. The problem with that is for federal workers, most of the healthcare system is the employers are government, and they're very difficult to get the government to go through the LMIA process. In order for a Canadian employer to hire a foreign worker, they have to get permission from the federal government to hire a foreign worker. Before the federal government will give that permission, they ask the employer to demonstrate quite conclusively that there's no Canadian ready, willing, or able to take that job.
Right.
So that you don't create unemployment by bringing in foreign workers. It's a way of protecting the Canadian labor market. And so the federal government, as part of an application for a certificate to hire a foreign worker, requires a labor market impact assessment, LMIA. And that's really the first step. If you're planning on coming to Canada, you have to think backwards, sort of like dominoes. In order to get a permanent residence, I need a temporary residence. To get a temporary residence, I need a work permit. To get a work permit, I need an LMIA. To get an LMIA, that's the first part of all the dominoes that have to fall over backwards.
Right.
And so all these programs that the federal government has designed are all pull programs, I call them. They're all designed to pull into Canada where and how they want the brightest and the best and the most skilled and the educated and the English-speaking people who will stay out of the justice system, stay out of the medical system, stay out of the welfare system, and help our country thrive.
They will not cost us.
Right, yeah. And that's very reasonable. So they're all pull programs. But the incentive to come to Canada comes from a person who's overseas and he's trying to push his way into Canada. And so there's where the dichotomy occurs. The government's programs are all pull. The only people who make it happen are those who push. And then, of course, whenever you set up a system, you're going to have somebody try and game it. And so the government spends an inordinate amount of time trying to make their system as game-proof as possible. Meanwhile, the provincial governments are going to be given more and more power to attract what they need, when they need, how they need it, on the terms that they need. I'll give you a good example. Manitoba, always the leader in nomination programs, has a business nomination program that provides a very strong incentive for decentralizing the economy, moving outside the greater Winnipeg area. So your investment in Winnipeg has to be a minimum of $250,000. Whereas if you go outside that area, it's only $150,000. So there's very low likelihood that someone in Ottawa would be motivated to even know that that's an issue and to come up with a solution. Whereas in Manitoba, it's very acute and it's easily addressed on right. the local level. I think that's what's going to happen. I think that all the service industries are going to become more and more demand. Healthcare, machine operators, cashiers, service station attendants, you know, sheet metal workers, tool and die makers, electricians, plumbers, all the construction trades, drywallers, cabinet makers, roofers. I know in Manitoba, there's been for 10 years a shortage of roofers. Tile setters, next to impossible, they all come from overseas. Because of the nature of our general economy and of our consumerism and how a lot of the complicated manufacturing takes place overseas and is very smart and complex, things have changed. And so we need less university professors and we need more sewing machine repairmen. Our whole education right. system based on academics. So we're going to be switching more and more to technical skill sets, like similar to Europe. Mm-hmm. Here, I'll give you a good example. I have a client who has a chain of hairstylist salons in the city. They're continual shortage. They're not opening stores and they're in fact closing stores because they don't have enough stylists. Manitoba's total education system can only graduate 210 hairstylists a year. They have 600 applying. There's only enough to put 200 through. And the day they graduate, 180 leave for Toronto or Vancouver, where they can make twice the salary and they can party. Because when you graduate, you're making big money and you're 23 years old, you want to go to the big city. And then every year, 20 people in Manitoba get too old and retire. And so if anything, we're losing hairstylists. But there are lots of hairstylists all over the world who would love to come to Canada, don't need to have a high level of English, don't need a lot of education, don't need much more than a couple of years of experience. Yeah. They're dying to come to Manitoba. And if the federal government can process those LMIAs, they'd be here. Manitoba, once again, innovated the concept of having a certification for foreign recruiters. Mm-hmm. There's my foreign recruiter's license.
There's evidence.
Yes. There's only about 20 or 25 people who have a foreign recruiter's license in Manitoba. You have to have a foreign recruiter's license to recruit people in Manitoba. If not, there's horrendous fines, $500,000 fines, five years in jail. You can't even apply for an LMIA from Manitoba unless you disclose whether you're doing it yourself or with assistance. And that assistant has to be a licensed recruiter. And before you start, you have to get permission to apply for an LMIA for a foreign worker from the Manitoba government before you can go to the federal government. The immigration application is mission critical. Immigration is like jumping across a ditch full of alligators. Getting 99% across does not help. You're going to wind up very wet.
Yes, for sure.
It's like horseshoes. Worse. Yeah, it's not like horseshoes where close counts. I forgot to mention this. This is very important. In Manitoba, we have extremely strict legislation that applicants are not to pay any recruitment costs or reimburse an employer for any recruitment costs. All recruitment costs must be paid by the employer. All the advertising, all the recruitment fees, everything. There's no casting couches in Manitoba. And they enforce that through the licensed recruiter system.
So earlier you mentioned three steps.
You start with an employer who's willing to put up with the time, cost, hassle, and high failure rate of applying for an LMIA.
So once you've identified an employer, then getting the LMIA, and then what would the next step be after that?
If we get the LMIA, mm-hmm. that employer can now allocate the LMIAs to candidates of his choice. These candidates then use the LMIA certificate number as a gateway that they require in order to get a work permit.
Right.
Can't come to Canada and work unless you have a work permit. Mm-hmm. A work permit is a temporary residence visa most of the time, other than open work permits, which is a different story. But it's for a specific employer in a specific place, the specific job at a specific rate of pay for a specific time and purpose. And so in effect, and that's the only light at the end of the tunnel for employers, is that it's a form of golden handcuffs. It says to a roofer, okay, I'll put up with the time expense and money and risk. And if you come work for me and not jump across and go work for my competitor, make it even worse for me.
Right.
So you're tied to that work. You're tied to that employer.
For X amount of years.
Usually 1 year, often 2 years.
Okay.
Now, during that time, the employee can attempt to change from temporary to permanent. Mm-hmm. This is like an engagement period. It's time for the employer and the employee to fall in love with each other. And so if they do, then the employer can take appropriate steps to extend that work permit. Mm-hmm. The employee can apply to either through express entry or through PNP for permanent residence.
Right. So provincial nominee program is PNP.
Right.
Yep.
If they have a spouse, the spouse can piggyback on their work permit with what? Back to this. And get an open work permit, which is a work mm-hmm. permit with no restrictions. Allows you to work for anyone, anyhow, any rate, any price, just like a Canadian. It also allows their children to come along with them and to attend school. And all in Manitoba, all of them are entitled to the exact same medical as Manitoba residents.
Great. And
so if you consider situation in other countries, they suddenly get free education, free medical, a guaranteed job at a guaranteed rate, okay, subject to stringent labor laws, because a lot of my clients are surprised that the employers have obligations, whereas in
yes.
a lot of countries they don't.
And very strongly enforced obligations.
Yes, they are. We're big on human rights in Canada. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it one of the best places in the world to live, if not yes. the best place in the world to live. Like most swords, it's got two edges. So the employer has guaranteed you, gave you a contract for 1 year to be a sewing machine operator at $13.50 an hour, plus piecework bonuses, plus this benefit plan, all in writing between the employee, the employer, and the government, maybe 2-3 different government agencies, the LMIA, the PNP, the ICRC, and the Department of Labor. They're all hooked in, okay? And so now the employee can be pretty confident in that. But
right.
should the employee not perform and the employer choose to terminate them, their work permit expires and they have 30 days to leave the country.
Right.
Okay, which can be quite discombobulating if you have a wife and family. And so you do whatever you can to keep that job, and that means being a good employee.
Yes. Yeah.
So everybody benefits from that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very, working on a work permit is a very strong incentive to perform.
What other considerations are there for employers?
A lot of times it's a skill set that's just not available in Canada.
Right.
And so I have a client who brings over extremely sophisticated production machinery.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He is a linchpin in a whole segment of manufacturing, because he sells the machines that make the machines. The problem is that who services them when they break, who installs them, who instructs the Canadian staff on how to do it? Nobody knows how to do that except the European service people. And so he has to bring those people over. And so what the employer gains is he gains skill sets that are not available in Canada.
Right.
And so he can't sell those machines unless he sells a service contract with them.
Perfect.
So we're getting skills that we don't always get. This country is built on immigration. Mm-hmm. I just saw a statistic, I bet you Vancouver it's higher, but in Toronto, 52% of people are first or second generation immigrants. And they make this country rock and roll, because an immigrant comes in, suddenly he's buying a mattress that you only buy every 5 or 10 years. He's buying one right away. He's buying one for everybody in his family. He's buying cups and saucers and spoons and sheets, computers and desks and shoes that were never before bought before. And yep. So suddenly we have a huge demand. And so when there's more demand, like a rising tide, all the ships go up. And so immigration is great for a country. And especially a country like Canada that has so much physical space and so many resources to convert. This is the place to be. And that's why 25 million people a year make an inquiry to immigrate to Canada.
Okay.
To put that into context, if there's only 200 working days and 8 hours in a day, that's 20,000 people an hour.
Wow.
Make an inquiry. Can you imagine?
That's a lot of processing.
Yes, to process that. Canada, yes, it's a very popular place.
We've talked about foreign workers and the program quite a bit. What other streams, what other ways can people come to Canada?
Okay, I always explain this to my clients. There's only four ways you can come to Canada, okay? You can marry a Canadian. You can be supported by your family. It takes forever if you have family. So family support system. The second way is to come via business. But in order to come via business, you have to have some money. Okay, mm-hmm. Immigrants don't have money. That only leaves two other ways. That's as a student or as a worker. As a worker, you have to get that coveted LMIA. Or the other way, one of the more popular ways, is to come as a student.
Yes.
Okay. You come as a student, take a course, graduate, get a postgraduate work permit, and then you're eligible for express entry or nomination. Mm-hmm. I just did one this morning where a young girl, a 19-year-old girl from Sierra Leone, okay, as long as she can meet the criteria, she's going to come here and learn to be an administrative assistant. She will happily start at the ground level. This is a whole new world for her. She's getting all sorts of human rights and freedoms that she doesn't enjoy in her own country. And she'll be 20 years old and she'll have graduated from a technical school here. And I will get her a postgraduate work permit, which will give her a 1 year to get Canadian experience. And within that year, we'll apply for either the provincial PNP or the express entry, whichever one is the most efficient for her, and she'll be able to convert that to permanent residence.
Okay. Excellent.
And so that person is perfect for us. She's now 20 years old. She's now starting to earn money. She's going to buy things. She's going to get better and better.
Mm-hmm. She'll get promoted and
yes,
maybe start a business.
They're all upwardly, immigrants are all upwardly mobile. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm an immigrant. I was born in England.
Yes. Maybe if you want to talk a little bit about the caregiver roles and nursing roles and stuff, are they on the PNP at this point?
Yeah. Yes, they are. And they're also on the federal one. But let me explain how this works.
Sure.
Okay. Caregivers are a unique situation in Canada. It used to be that if you wanted to be a caregiver, the employer had to get an LMIA. Caregivers fall into two general categories. And that would be those who look after children, child care support workers, or those who look after the elderly, which are called home care workers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so if you were an elderly person and you wanted to get a caregiver, you have to get an LMIA, which is a expensive trip. And it would cost around, by the time you're finished, about $5,000-$6,000 before you had permission to hire a caregiver. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you find the caregiver, and that caregiver could come to Canada on a temporary work permit, usually for 2 years. And then while they were here, they would try and convert it to a permanent residence and then bring the rest of their family with them. Mm-hmm. But because caregivers are in a unique situation is that they usually would live within your home for the convenience of the employer and to save costs for the employee because they get room and board with their job, right?
Mm-hmm.
So because of that situation, it was subject to a lot of abuse. So last October 2020, the government abolished LMIAs for caregivers.
Okay.
We're running a pilot program, and we're going to run a pilot program and allow two groups of 5,000 in, 5,000 for child caregivers and 5,000 elder care. We're going to do a different program. We're going to say employer get together, come up with a employment agreement that fits within our parameters, and both of you apply together. And once we approve the employer, we will then start processing the applicant. If everything is in keeping with our plan, we will issue the caregiver a two-year work permit and a permanent residence that's deferred to the end of that work permit. In other words, before you leave, say the Philippines, you've got a permanent residence visa, but it's post-dated. And you can only claim that after you've served 2 years of experience in Canada as verified by the employer. And so here's a work permit so that you can do so. It's a good idea in a lot of ways. They're trying to iron out the kinks. They have the 5,000 childcare workers were used up within 4 or 5 weeks.
Oh, so that's all taken care of, that capacity.
But they're going to renew it in 2022 at least double, if not more. And the same thing for elder care. Mm-hmm. They gave them 5,000. Ironically, only about 3,500 have been used up. It's still open right now. Mm-hmm. But when 2022 rolls around, they're going to open up that, you know, expand the pilot program that much more, clarify a few things. That's what a pilot program's for.
Sure, to test it.
And it's a real good idea because, as I mentioned, my sister, a lawyer, okay?
Right.
She can't go to work because she has children.
Well, right.
She needs a nanny. There's very few Canadians that will take a nanny job.
Right.
The fact that she can get a nanny allows her to earn a lawyer's salary that pays big taxes to the government. That's a good idea.
It's a win-win.
Right. And she spends money being a lawyer. She buys a car. She goes to work. She buys clothes. Sure. Everybody wins when everybody's working. And so nannies are a good idea. But the situation was so acute in Toronto. I don't know about Vancouver, but I heard that in Toronto, they go to a park and look for a foreign worker pushing around the baby, and they offer her a jumping bonus.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. Eh? So it's
and the same thing with elder care. And my recently late mother, she was in a long-term care facility, and some of them had elder cares, and they were stealing them from each other all the time.
Wow. That's when there's a demand. When you start stooping to that level, then you know there's a strong demand.
Yes, there was.
Frank, how does that compare the caregiver side versus nursing, et cetera? Is nursing in high demand as well?
Nursing is in high demand.
Yeah.
But like I said before, the majority of healthcare employers are government.
Mm.
Government doesn't want to go through a LMIA process.
Right.
Okay. And a hospital is not going to do an LMIA. They just mm-hmm. won't do it. Or okay. If they are, somebody has to incent them. But their HR department is a wait and see department. You know, let's advertise for nurses and see if we get any. Oh, we can't get any. We have a shortage. They're not going to do anything about it. Okay. Whereas an employer, a private employer says, hey, I can't put roofs on. I better go hire roofers. So that's the big problem. That's the first problem. The second problem is credentials. What's a nurse in Indonesia may not be a nurse in Canada. What's a nurse in the Congo is not a nurse in Canada.
Different qualifications, different training, et cetera.
Yeah, better or worse, it's not the same. So there are various government-approved agencies that'll verify qualifications. Mm-hmm. It's difficult and time-consuming. And the easier way to get Canadian accreditation is to come as a caregiver. Because if you're a nurse, you've demonstrated that you have the education and usually experience to take care of people in some capacity.
And so at that point, would they also take nursing classes here?
Well, or courses or set exams. And so a lot of our nurses come here as caregivers, take advantage of the low cost of living because they usually get room and board included in their salary.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And because of our labor laws, they only work 40 hours a week at the most, usually somewhere between 30 and 40 hours. And so they have lots of time to take nursing courses, upgrade their licenses, take exams. And by the end of the 2 years, they're now qualified to be a nurse in Canada, make their $60 an hour, and move on and leave a space for another immigrant to come in and be a caregiver.
Is that the going rate in Canada, about $60 an hour for a nurse?
$60 to $70 an hour they can make, yes.
Okay, that's great for people to know. So is there anything regarding caregivers, nursing, or in general, that makes Manitoba an easier place to access with the LMIA or any of that process that Manitoba might have that's unique compared to other provinces or the government, the federal government?
That's a real good question. LMIA is a federal program and mm-hmm. it is equally applied all across Canada. Mm-hmm. And so you don't have an advantage being in Manitoba, except that it's easy to demonstrate a demand in Manitoba because of a lower population.
Right.
And also that there's a lack of supply because of lower population.
Right. So there's an acute need there, whereas it might be harder to demonstrate in other provinces.
Right. We're assembling a database of employers who want nannies or elder care people.
Okay, great.
In the caregiver situation, the employer only will pay all the recruitment costs, and if he chooses, can pay some of the immigration costs, but he need not. And the immigrants usually pay their own immigration costs. Mm, so it's like a 50-50 split usually. Manitoba also has another program through their PNP. They also have the Employer Direct program. And so for certain professions, you can get Manitoba PNP to issue a nomination certificate to an overseas person with a letter of support so that they can apply for permanent residence and get a work permit to come to Canada. So if you're a sewing machine operator,
yep.
Right now in Manitoba, there's a demand for 100 sewing machine operators. Okay. So if you're a sewing machine operator, you can be in Manila, apply. If the employer has passed the Manitoba Employer Direct Program, he can then recommend you, the province, then interviews you and decides whether or not you're qualified. And mm-hmm. if you meet the criteria, the province will issue you a, this you being the Manila sewing machine operator, mm-hmm. a nomination certificate together with a letter of support. This will get you a work permit that you can immediately come here and start working, and you can immediately apply for permanent residence, which will take about another year, but you can come immediately with assessment. So the concept is real good, except that the Manitoba Employer Direct criteria are quite stringent, and you have to have a high level of English to meet that. And very few sewing machine operators in Manila have a high level of English.
I see. So studying English would be a key thing.
Yeah, so it doesn't really work that well for sewing machine operators, but it works really well for, say, lab assistants. Mm-hmm. Lab assistants usually have been through university and speak English, you know, whereas sewing machine operators don't. Right now, there's a shortage of automotive and marine mechanics. Okay, most of them don't speak English. They're probably the best mechanics going, but they don't speak English. For a while there was a big shortage. Now, because of the pandemic, there isn't. But when cars were normally smashing into each other, there was a huge demand for auto body workers and automotive painters.
Sure, it makes sense.
And I brought some over from Korea. A week later, the employer called me to say, I have to let him go. And I said, why? I saw his work. He says, oh yeah, he'll paint. When you give him a car, it comes out, looks like it came out of the factory, except I wanted it blue and he made it green.
Oh, right, right.
His English was too difficult to work with.
Right.
Okay, so
it sounds like getting foundational English, like one of the things we could offer our audience is probably to assure that they study English is going to be one of the keys to coming into Canada, isn't it? Right. Or French.
Yeah, English or French. French is even better if you're going to start a language from scratch, because if you're French speaking, you don't need an LMIA.
Oh, I see.
You just need an employer.
Interesting.
Straight to work permit, right?
That's very interesting.
Which is good, like if like Congo, where it's the Congo, Morocco, Tunisia. As long as you don't go to Quebec, if you're going to work outside of Quebec and you speak French, if you got a job, you can be hired. The purpose of the program is to get French-speaking people outside of Quebec, to get more Canada speaking more French.
To be more bilingual.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
I had a rural car wash facility that could not get employees. We couldn't get an LMIA for it because when you put an ad in the paper for a car washer, you get 10,000 people applying.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can do it. LMIA said, well, there's so many Canadians want to do that job, we're not going to let you bring in a foreigner. So we went to the province and said, let's do it through Employer Direct. And he said, yeah, well, they have to have a high level of English. Well, most people who want to wash cars don't speak that great in English in their own country.
Mm-hmm.
So the solution was we went to French-speaking countries where people speak French at whatever level they speak. And people who are washing cars there are delighted to come to Canada.
Sure.
And they come here and they wash cars because you don't need to communicate that much when you're washing someone's car.
And you can actually make enough money that you could save some and move up.
And because you're living in our environment, you start to learn English.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're a young man washing cars and only speak French, as soon as you see a Canadian girl, you start to learn English.
That's a motivator.
No, as soon as you meet a girl, as soon as you go to a store, as soon as you go to a movie, you better learn English pretty good. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you will. And you want to learn English just the same way as if I went to another country, I'd want to learn their language.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so
for caregivers or for others, what should they do? Should they reach out to you? Should they put certain things in place? How should that work?
Yeah, well, we have a system to make it easy for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
They need only go to our website, cdnvisa.com, CDN like Canadian, visa.com.
Mm-hmm.
And on it is an assessment form that they can complete, no cost, no obligation. They can complete that assessment form and we'll review the assessment form and advise them whether or not it's worthwhile for them to engage in a consultation. If it isn't, I'll let them know that their case isn't strong enough yet. And if it is, I'll invite them to a consultation. There's a fee for the consultation. During that consultation, I'll evaluate their case, explain to them various pathways, make everything specific only to what they're doing. It takes a whole hour, sometimes more.
Okay.
And it concludes with a mutually agreeable pathway to move forward. And then I will give them a proposal at that point. If they reject it, that's fine. No cost, no obligation.
So any employers or potential employers for caregivers, and then talk about others, what should they do? Should they reach out to you? Should they put certain things in place? How should that work? Maybe they're in Winnipeg. They've been here for 20 years, but they're from Serbia. And they have a masonry company and they need to find five masons.
Okay, if they need five masons, they would contact us. I would discuss their situation with them.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I just did that with a German excavator. He was an excavator construction company, just did that last week. You know, see all that machinery digging holes in the ground?
Yes.
That's him, okay? Mm-hmm. The problem is you can't get people to work those excavating machines.
Right.
And work the 15-hour shifts in the summer and stay home in the winter. So
right.
We met with him and strategized a way that we could not only solve his business problem, but fit within the regulations that apply to excavating workers.
Mm-hmm.
That's where our database and expertise comes in. And we came up with a plan. We then applied for permission from the provincial government,
mm-hmm.
got him to qualify. And now we're placed ads, all of which have to comply to the criteria of the LMIA.
Yep.
And once those come in, we'll document everything and make application on his behalf. Of course, he said, I would prefer people from Germany because mm-hmm. even though we work in English all day long, I'm of German heritage. I'm comfortable with these people. I want to help some of my countrymen. And sometimes our work is done in German. And so we'll go into our database and find some people from Germany, or we have agents around the world who will find these people.
Wonderful.
Employers, it has to be a one-on-one discussion because each one has a different business strategy. The strategy I came up with for the excavators, his major problem was that in the summertime when the sun is shining and they can dig holes because it's not raining, they work 15, 16 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
In the wintertime when it's frozen, as you know from Winnipeg,
They're laid off. Yeah.
Well, the LMIA program says, no, this is not for seasonal work.
Right.
So the problem I had to solve for him was how to get around that. And we did that by coming up with a time bank system that we pay the employees year round and we bank their hours. So in the summer, they work 15 hours. In the winter, they work 0 hours. but they get paid year round. So it's no longer a seasonal job. But that was a unique
great
situation.
Stuff. Thinking out of the box.
Yes, we have to. Roofers, like I said, roofers have been calling me for decades, saying, I got no roofers. It's very hard work. It doesn't pay that well. And their issue is, once again, hard to put roofs on in Winnipeg in the wintertime. Yeah, the solution there is diversify. Build fences and put on siding all winter. It's the same nailing and squaring up. It's just vertical instead of horizontal. Each business takes a different solution.
See, that's the mind of an entrepreneur at work.
Well, I'm just a business person. I have another issue where we had a moving company. Their biggest problem was one of the three moves, which runs at an average of about $1,500 a move. One of the three moves resulted in a $5,000 loss when somebody drops the vase.
Wow.
Somebody drops somebody's Ming vase or backs a two-wheeler through a glass door or something. Okay, the biggest problem was incompetent people, because the type of people you attract in Canada who are going to be a mover, they're not at the same professional level as the average neurosurgeon. It's just not going to happen. The solution is, because he had brought it by fluke, he had attracted several people from South America, and they were very good workers, very diligent, always showed up, didn't have to dig them out of the drunk tank on Monday mornings. They never broke anything. They never stole anything from his customers. He said, Frank, get me a dozen or so South American workers.
Great.
He was so desperate that he even started to learn Spanish so he could communicate with them. Well, the problem is it doesn't fall into the LMIA categories for a whole bunch of reasons. The wage rate and the hours and the seasonality and all that. We came up with a plan for them to attract movers. They're no longer movers. They are now crew leaders. They're now
managers.
Warehouse managers, right?
Got it.
Warehouse managers who come to work at the warehouse, prepare the space, hop in the truck, go out to somebody's house, gets all their furniture in the truck and brings it back to the warehouse. And then and reverses the process. So it's a little bit different when you're working with employers.
And so again, employers can reach out directly to you.
Yes, they can.
And all your information is at cdnvisa.com. And so that's great, Frank. I think that's a lot of great information. Why don't we wrap it up with that? Thanks very much for joining us, Frank.
Thank you very much for having me.
Great. We'll be in touch. And that concludes this Bernie Chats for jobsincanada.com. Please feel free to subscribe, like, share, and comment. Thank you so much for supporting the channel. I look forward to seeing you on the next Bernie Chats for jobsincanada.com.